Blog Talk Radio.
Well, everybody, it's once again. Oh, it's actually an orc this time. That's a great bumper music. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know why. But with no further ado, let's bring on the best-looking man from the state of Tennessee. The one, the only. The
well, thank you.
I wasn't even done yet. I wasn't even close to being done yet. But anyway, how are we doing?
I was just overcome.
So anyway, I hear that you have thunderstorms coming through there tonight, right?
We do. We have a pretty bad line of thunderstorms that are moving through. Probably about a couple hours from now, they'll really hit here. But we got a lot of wind and looking like a rough night tonight.
Well, nice thing about thunderstorms is you always bring back your corpses that you dug up from the graveyard back to life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. just put an antenna on top of the tower and you can bring those suckers back.
That's right. I remember watching Frankenstein when I was a kid, right? Remember that?
Yeah.
And that's what the show is going to be talking about. We're talking about the horror films that we liked, the ones we liked as kids, the ones we liked growing up, and what the hell it turned into today. But well, let's start with you, sir. What are the horror films that you grew up with?
Well, of course, Frankenstein. Everybody loved Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Dracula and The Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
I think The Mummy was one of my favorites. Yeah.
Now, you mean the one with Boris Koloff, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, I like the Hammer ones with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing as well. But the ones that I grew up with, I remember there was a show that came out of Chattanooga called Shock Theater. And it was hosted by Dr. Shock and a puppet called Dingbat. And growing up, that's what everybody watched on Saturday night. I mean, you didn't go to school and not be able to talk about what was on Shock Theater on Saturday night. I mean, it was a huge deal.
Yeah, I mean, here, grew up in Madison, we had something similar. Mephisto, I think the guy's name was. He was presented by the local TV outlet. And, yeah, I mean, he was on whatever time he was on. It was always a weird movie. He sometimes had people on with him, sometimes he didn't. It was a good time. It was a good time. Nothing out of the ordinary, nothing over the top, good old-fashioned horror films, right?
Just fun stuff and family-friendly fun stuff, most of it. You know, really good.
Well, I mean, you look at Boris Koloff, you got things like The Black Cat as one, or White Zombie was another one, right? I mean, they were horror films, but... My grandkids here were watching. It came on late at night. I'd have no problems with them watching them.
Right. They're not. And, you know, The Black Cat is really a very scary film. But it's not gross. And there's not a lot of nudity. It's, you know, it's fit for a child if the child is not freaked out by it.
Right. I mean, we all have the decision to make at what age we want to see our kids watch what, right? That's what our right as a parent, unless, of course, we work for Disney, it seems. But, we have to make those decisions. But, yeah, I mean, to me, mind you, if my grandkids are, I think, Paxton's about 5 now. I don't want him to watch something R-rated necessarily, right? But let's say I'm still around. I'm still around on Earth, maybe 16, 17. I wouldn't mind why I'm watching an R-rated film.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Right?
Right.
But again, when I was growing up, I remember the Hammer vampire films.
Yes.
Okay. And that's why I think I developed my fetish for redheads with Larger Excellence.
Those Hammer vampire films will do that to you. Yes, indeed.
They would. And the thing was that even then, and one could make the argument that they're more risque And with a lot of stuff going on now, but there's still no nudity, but you didn't have to have nudity. You didn't have to have nudity to have sexuality.
Right. Exactly. I will tell you an interesting story. This was a film in the 70s that Shock Theater hosted on local TV. And normally the guy that was Dr. Shock was Tommy Lee Reynolds. And he was the production manager at the local television station. And normally he would shoot the films on Thursday, or shoot the show on Thursday night, and it would air on Saturday night. So it's pre-recorded. But if something was going on Thursday night and he couldn't pre-record it, then he would just do it live on Saturday. So they were doing this film called Beast of the Yellow Night. No, it was Blood Island, a Philippine film. And they're airing it for the first time, and they aired it. They weren't able to record on Thursday night, and so they're airing it live, and they go in, and part of it is these tribesmen are staking these women out to be sacrificed to the monster, whatever the monster is. And they go through, and they rip this woman's top off on local TV, and all of a sudden it cuts to black. And then they get Dr. Shock and Dingbat on, and Dingbat goes, "Well, Dr. Shock, what did you think of that?" And he goes, "Well, Dingbat, I think we need to screen our films better."
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like about the horror films growing up, I mean, Vincent Price, you know, is big. You know, I mean, they were all fun times. And what really, and this might sound silly, well, more than once I saw a Vincent Price film or with the Mad Scientist sort of thing, and the next day someone would find me in the library looking for books, not only maybe by the person who wrote the movie, but books on that science that they talked about, right? I found that stuff interesting.
I did too. I had read everything Edgar Allan Poe had written by the time I was probably in the seventh grade, and I had done it because of the Vincent Price, Roger Corman movies.
There you go, yeah. I mean, here as a kid, do you remember reading The Gold Bug?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
They had it. I'm sorry?
I said, yes, I do.
Okay. I remember reading The Gold Bug, and they talked about the code breaking. And they tell me in the library getting books on code breaking.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I find very fascinating, and a shame that poor people don't use it, is using horror films and the like as a way to educate kids. Let's go to the library and read more about this.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that, you know, my grandmother was an amateur Egyptologist. My father had traveled. He was in the Navy, so he traveled all over the Mediterranean. He'd been to Alexandria and Cairo. And I was probably 5 or 6. We went to Chattanooga, went out to eat. We went and got they used to make the Revel and Aurora used to make those monster models. And we got the mummy and brought it home, and there was a place in the mall called Wicks and Sticks that sold candles and incense, and Dad bought some Egyptian musk incense. So we came home, and we put this mummy together with the incense burning, and then Shock Theater come on, and it was the mummy, 1931 mummy with Boris Karloff, and we watched it that night. And I remember that night just clear as a bell, but I have always had this incredible, I mean, I've read everything there is to read about ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Because of that movie.
Yeah. I mean, the thing now, and we're not even close to talking about modern day horror films, and I found them interesting. Mm-hmm. I still find that stuff interesting, you know, to see how that stuff can be used to encourage kids to do more than sit at home and play video games.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and
There are some tremendous writers of horror. I know you're a fan of H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes, sir.
Great writer. Robert E. Howard, who was a friend of Lovecraft's, and writing at the same time. They never met in person, but they corresponded. They were writing at the same time. Robert E. Howard wrote Conan, which was something I grew up with. But Robert E. Howard wrote a lot of horror as well. And these guys, I mean, it is fascinating reading.
Yes, it is. I mean, the idea of, and you have a lot more of that's going on down in Tennessee than we do in the state of Wisconsin anymore, but you have a lot of folk stuff. The idea of folklore being turned into horror as a way to motivate people to do things. I think that's absolutely fascinating.
It is incredible. It is incredible. We had, I live in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and we had something called the South Pittsburgh Monster in 1936, which is usually classified as a Bigfoot. But the description doesn't quite match what you typically think of as a Bigfoot or a skunk ape. It's what they're called in the South. This thing hopped. And reports of this creature in 1936 actually made it into the New York Times.
No.
Yeah. And that's, that's actually, I found out about it in a college history class, and one of my professors had read about it and said, Ralston, go look that up, you know. And I went and looked it up, and there were several articles in the New York Times in 1936 about the South Pittsburgh, or about the South Pittsburgh. It was actually, actually the St. Pauli's, the Hamburg Monster. There was a district of South Pittsburgh that was called Hamburg. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was called Hamburg because before Prohibition, that's where all the speakeasy, where all the bars were and the brothels, and that was the wild side of town. And it was named after the St. Pauli's district in Hamburg, Germany. But it was called the Monster of Hamburg.
Well, I'll be. You should go and talk to my friend Dean Burnham, who runs Midwest Word Fest. He also is on Facebook with his I can't think of it, but he's on Facebook. You can find him under his name, Dean Burnham, or under Midwest Word Fest. He'd love to hear that story about the South Pittsburgh Monster. He's big into that sort of stuff.
Okay. I will look him up. While we're talking about social media, I want to invite everybody to look up Tennessee Macabre Social Media. That's the name of our show. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and we're on Twitter. And you can also go to our Vimeo channel under Tennessee Macabre, and you can watch, I think we've got like 40 films out there that we've hosted. So you can go watch our show tonight. Just go to Vimeo. / Tennessee Macabre, and you can go to TennesseeMacabre.com and find all of our links.
Wow, thank you so much for mentioning that. I will do that myself. I don't need sleep.
You're welcome.
I don't need sleep. I mean, God, what got me involved with horror, I mean, God, I think as a little kid in movies, then when I was a kid, it was right around the time electricity was invented. So movies were about maybe a couple of bucks of that, right?
Yeah.
And we used to see them all. Usually, again, and my parents, well, my parents were both drunk, so they didn't know what I was doing half the time. But the idea was that you could see the kids could see the movies, nothing was going to bad, it was going to go down. Now, I might be jumping the gun a bit. I mean, I trust my children when they were younger to make choices and the movies they were going to see, right? And we were pretty liberal as parents, what we didn't care what they watched. But movies anymore, my God. I mean, I can't think of the last horror movie that didn't exist in gore.
Yeah. There are trends in the horror industry. You go from the good content horror movies, and you creep along, you know, they take things like, you know, Hammer's a classic example. I think Hammer made 7 Dracula movies from 1958 to 1972. And they will take a genre and they wear it out. And as you move away from the horror that has a story behind it, you move more towards things that are slasher flicks and focused on blood and gore and don't have the suspense and don't have the, you know, they're all visual.
Right, right.
But that is an easy step in a horror movie.
Well, the thing is, I once did a show at the Neepin, Wisconsin, where we had an international panel show off of all things. And we talked about was nudity lazy filmmaking. And we came to the conclusion that nudity in horror films was indeed lazy filmmaking.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
I agree.
Trust me, I'm older than I was when I was a kid. But if I know a movie is going to be marginal, but I'm going to see naughty bits, I might be persuaded to watch it.
Yes.
You know, but I'd rather have a movie. Yeah. I'd rather have a movie with a plot.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
I mean, do you remember? Have you ever seen a movie with Vincent Price called Theater of Blood with Vincent Price and Diana Rigg?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
It's a great flick.
Well, that was a great flick. That was a little bloody, if I remember correctly. But with the plot that was the winning, the plot was absolutely wonderful. I never expected that twist to come. Never.
No, you don't. And, you know, and that was one of Vincent Price's last horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a perfect example. It was bloodier than a lot of his earlier work, but you were leaving a period where Hammer had been big and Roger Corman had been big. And Vincent Price did a lot of work with Roger Corman, did several anthologies, and then he did all those Poe-based movies. But you were leaving that period where that stuff was selling, and you were moving towards a period that was going to focus more on blood and gore. And so you see that in Theater of Blood. You see more of the blood and gore in it.
Oh, right. I mean, at the same time that the movie Canker Worm came out, or also called Witchfinder General, with Vincent Price. Are you familiar with that film?
Oh, yes. I love
that
film.
I do, too. And the ending of that film really freaked me out.
Yes.
I mean, it's based on history. Those kind of things did happen. And it freaked me out. I mean, I enjoyed the movie because, this is not going to be horrible. I'm such a horrible person. I really enjoyed the way that the girl kept her father away from Vincent Price, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, no more being said on that aspect, but that whole thing was a good, can I call it a fun film?
Yeah, well, definitely you can call it a fun film.
Yeah. I mean,
And, you know, it was... Again, it's one of those films, it has historical merit. I mean, it doesn't follow, you know, Matthew Hopkins, who is who that character's modeled after, was a very real witch finder. So it's not a historical film, doesn't claim to be. It does pull from history.
Yeah.
And if you love that film, chances are you'll be interested in that period of history. You know?
Yes. I mean, the whole thing is you can do those things, make a good horror film, leave the audience satisfied. Your motivation doesn't have to get them to go to the library, get them to do anything else, but then walk out of that theater with a positive experience. That's a winning situation as I see it, right? And the rest is all bonus. Well, let's try for the bonuses when we can, right? I mean, kind of the one I like. Remember the Wicker Man, the first one?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh, I love that film. Now, I don't care for the remake, but the original film was very good. Now, there's a lot of nudity in it. There's, you know, but it's still a good film, and it deals with the topic, you know, there's a lot of controversy about around that topic, you know, whether or not the ancient Britons did practice human sacrifice and ritual sexuality. But it is very much grounded in history.
Yes. Even, God, I ran with Wiccans way too long. And yes, I think be persuaded that there is ritual nudity and it happened back in the day. Well, Garner liked naughty bits and girls, therefore he was going to come up with that, but it's another argument for another day. I mean, it's all part of horror films, too. It's all part of the culture. It's all part of the whole thing, in my opinion, and I could be wrong. I don't think I am, but I could be wrong.
I don't think you are either. I know that, my background, I have a history degree. Okay, that's what my background is in. And King James IV of Scotland actually kept, he developed accounting. And so he had accountants that kept incredible records of everything he did during his reign. And one of the things that the accountants make entry of is that he had so many May Queens in pay at Edinburgh and so many at Stirling Castle. And what May Queens were women that had participated in these ritual sexual activities and had gotten pregnant. And so the king is paying them to keep them, So I had always, because, you know, you talk about that in history class, where was there really sexuality going on, that kind of ritual sexuality. And, they tell you where the name Jackson and Morrison and all that comes from. But there are also people that say, oh, that's overblown, it didn't happen. But you read that and you go, it was happening in King James's Scotland.
They have figurines from Germany of the pregnant woman, right? Obviously, she's very pregnant. She's very pregnant, right? And statues worshiping. The woman did not become pregnant because she ate an apple, right? Something else happened, right?
Yeah.
It's all part of the ritual. It was pretty much evident. Yeah. But again, because some things we don't talk about, it seems. I don't get that either, but that is what it is. Incredible stuff. But it's interesting, too, with horror films, is how we started off talking about horror films, and now we're talking about witchcraft in England.
I believe that horror at its best, what horror is it puts on the screen or in the book what is in the general subconscious that we don't talk about it. That's what a vampire is. A vampire is repressed sexuality. Werewolf is repressed violence. So I find when you start having these conversations about horror, they do tend to branch off into other areas, and you start talking about other things as well.
Oh, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. I mean, the thing that really bothers me, talking about pet peeves, and I have my share, is we had Ed Gein here, right? Ed Gein exists in, say, Wisconsin. He killed one person for sure he might have killed two. He may have dug up people from the graveyard, right? Those all debatable points, right? But people have done movies, which is fine. They've done movies and Ed Gein knock yourself out. But they want to make you believe what they tell you is the truth, and it's far from the truth. Yep. And that really upsets me because the truth makes far better horror than making shit up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There have been some incredible true stories that are just absolutely horrific. I live near a place called Brown's Tavern or Brown's Ferry, and it was founded by a man named John Brown, and I don't know the exact year, but it was one of the first taverns in this part of Tennessee. And his business, when you checked in John Brown's Tavern, you didn't check out.
Right. I wrote a book on that. I wrote a book called Dark River.
Yes.
Where we talked about all the river pirates back in that area.
Yes. And they think he may have killed as many as 600 people.
Yeah. I mean, all true. I mean, it's a true story. And that would make an interesting, very good horror film.
Yes, it would. Thank you for making an excellent
And I'd recommend, please, if you listen to the show, you want to use Reese Curry's book on true American history, go to Amazon and get my book, Dark River. The paperback,
Dark
I think,
River.
Is $6. Yes. And you can get the paperback. The Kindle is about $6. The paperback, I think, is $14. But if you like that sort of thing, I'm going to recommend that book highly.
That'd be great.
That's the thing is true history makes the scariest horror. Because,
my God,
did that actually happen? What's going on behind that door? What's my neighbor? Here you go. Future Two, three, yeah. no, okay, long enough. Let's say 5 years ago. My daughter is going off to school. Outside our home, we have the half of the same police force and have the little blood spotters flags, right? And they're playing these flags and taking pictures of the blood splatter. It seems next door, within 100 feet of my home, a guy went to a bar with his friend. They came back to his home, drinking at the table.
Yeah.
The guy took an axe and killed his friend, chopping him up in little pieces, right? And drug him to another location within 100 feet of my home. And we didn't hear a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrific because, my God, 100 feet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I will
tell you, my grandfather did a lot of business in Chicago.
Okay.
And he used to tell this story about coming out. He sold stoves, U.S. stove. He had come out of this business. I think it might have been come out of the Sears headquarters in Chicago. And he said he was walking down the street, and he heard gunfire, and he heard this clicking. And he said he recognized the gun, of course, but he didn't know what the clicking was. And the clicking noise, he found out later, was actions on Thompson machine guns.
Oh, wow.
And this was Valentine's Day, 1926.
Oh, wow.
He was a block away from the St. Valentine's Day massacre, and he heard the Tommy guns.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, true story, true. I mean, it's in every community. Every community has their own little horror things. Some they talk about, some they don't. I mean, here you go. I live in Racine, Wisconsin, right? In Racine, Wisconsin, we had a mayor go to prison for having a thing with little girls, right?
Yes.
Oh, he went to jail and stuff like that. He's out now. He's doing whatever he's doing. But himself and all his political friends all went to the same school. They all joined the same social club. And people wonder now, what else do they have in common?
Yeah.
You know, do they all have a thing for little girls? Is that random chance?
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems interesting. And then make another horse. Make an excellent horse story. Excellent.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just fascinating what people do, are capable of doing. I mean, the evil that people do, it's amazing.
Yes,
absolutely.
It is. I have, I have seen some pretty horrific things that people have done myself. Was involved in a school shooting as a high school. Yeah. And saw a guy, firing into the doorway with a pistol and took off the other direction. But, it's pretty freaky because this guy had been a friend of mine. And I'm not even sure he recognized me when I talked to him. He was gone.
It's
a scary thing.
Any given day, any of us can meet our own, not only our own fate, heaven forbid, right? But come across anything. And I think one of the things, too, that horror films can do, it's like the old stories of fairy tales and stuff can prepare us for what's out in the big bad world, because it is a big bad world.
It is a big bad world. That's right. And fairy tales are brutal.
I'm sorry, Glenn.
Pardon?
I said
fairy tales are brutal. Yeah. Fairy tales are brutal. And they definitely prepare you for the big bad world. And even some of them, like Little Red Riding Hood is a werewolf story.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of horror in fairy tales.
There is, and I think for a reason. I think the warning story is to make sure you don't do anything stupid, and because you don't know what's going to go on out there. That's why you have to be careful. You have to be careful. I mean, we don't have to hide in our homes and wearing a mask and NBC suit with overpressurized air systems, right? But we need to know what's going on. We need to be careful of the guy who drives up the white van and offers a little girl candy.
Right. Right, you know, exactly, exactly. Got to be aware of the big bad wolf.
You have to be, because if you're not, you become the victim. And if that is all horror films can do is educate, give people the idea that maybe it's not a good idea to hitchhike, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, let's not hitchhike.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's several films along that line, but yeah, and there are morals and ethics to be taught in horror. You know, one of the ones is don't play God.
Yes, don't play
God.
I mean,
that's the whole moral behind Frankenstein.
Yes, yes. In fact, and I always think that the master is more the victim than anybody else. Because he didn't choose any of it.
Yes, he didn't choose a thing. And, you know, I think Hammer got that right. You know, in the Hammer horror movies, in the Universal horror movies, Frankenstein is the monster. But in the Hammer horror movies, Peter Cushing plays Dr. Frankenstein, and he plays it in all of them, and he is the villain. And there's no question when you watch those movies that he's the evil person.
Yes. Yes, that's why it'll be interesting to see. I don't think they could do it now in today's political climate, but it would be interesting to see what happens in horror films that do that role, say, in 25 years.
Uh-huh.
And who gets who will be the evil guy? Who will be the evil man scientist? You know, because, I mean, this again, you not passing judgment on other people's choices, because it's not my job. But reading what I read and being a person that's knowledgeable when it comes to foreign affairs, I have questions, right? Yeah. No, we're not allowed to talk about it. Which makes, again, it's too interesting subject for a horror film or a conspiracy film, right? Because the thing is, why can't we talk about it? What are they trying to hide? Why are they trying to hide it? That's a perfect recipe for a conspiracy horror film.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
And I think that would make a very good horror film. There's a lot. When you start talking about conspiracy theory and using it to – and not talking about the validity or invalidity of the conspiracy theory, but if you start using conspiracy theory to create a horror movie, what would make that horror movie truly horrible is – you lose contact with what's real and what's not, and you don't know what's real and what's not. And that's where the horror is. And maybe the horror is real life, you know?
Yeah, and you don't know. That's interesting. I think there's been more than one movie about that subject, is when you lose contact with reality. I mean, what is real, what's not real? I mean, rabbit holes. I mean, I do books on the mafia, as you know, because I talked about them, right? I do some conspiracy stuff. We're kind of sort of maybe doing one on MKUltra. That's kind of a scary topic and the like, right?
Yes.
Because it happened, and there's a lot of information out there that people don't know about yet, and more information is coming to light every day. And it makes me think if we as a country, as a political leadership decided to do is put LSD and other drugs into people's drinks without them knowing about it, what else are we willing to do? If we're willing to go and let black men suffer from the ravages of syphilis and other venereal diseases, just to see what happens. What else are we capable to do as a country?
Yes. And we've done some horrible things. Yeah.
Oh God, we've done horrible things. I mean, the thing is.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me. This again, it's a perfect topic for a horror film. You heard of Unit 731 for Japan, right?
Yes.
So it's not just that. After the Civil War, and we got them all. All of them surrendered, and we got them all. We're going to try them in Tokyo. Some of them were tried and hung from the Tokyo war crimes.
Right.
But some of them got away. Any guess where they ended up?
United States.
United States. And you'd like to guess who they're working with?
The government.
What do you think they get? Right. What department of government?
I do not know.
The FDA.
FDA. Oh wow.
FDA.
Okay.
Oh wow, wow. Well, who else better to learn what kills people perfectly than people who've done it
yeah.
who kill people perfectly?
Yeah.
And the thing is,
yeah.
to me, I'm a veteran, right? I'm a veteran. I say sorry, right?
Right.
I believe
right.
for years and years and years and years that my government, if I would uh-huh. be captured as a prisoner and something horrible would happen to me, my government, should they win that war, would come after the people who did that to me for payback, right? Don't think
right.
that anymore. Don't think that anymore.
No.
Because
no.
they knew at the time what the Japanese people, what the Japanese torturers did to not only the Chinese people, which horrifically enough, not only Koreans, which was absolutely devastatingly horrible, but also American prisoners of war, British prisoners of war, and Australian prisoners of war.
Yeah. Right.
And they were able to look
right.
the way. I don't see that anything yeah. more than a horrific horror thing that anybody would get by with. I don't.
Yeah, my father worked with a man. I knew this guy. He was captured at Corregidor, so I kind of grew up with knowledge of what happened to American POWs in Japanese internment camps.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
incredible.
Horrible.
I mean. And up to the 60s, I was aware that sometimes Japanese tourists would come up missing.
Yeah.
That's the amount of hate that the Filipino people had for them. And I can't blame them any.
Yeah.
I had that the same amount of hate
yeah.
myself. But again, I mean, that's the thing that's nice about horror films, too, is you can have a horrific experience, and you can use that as a way writing a new book, writing a horror book, maybe making a horror movie, doing whatever,
yeah.
as a way to help you overcome that horrific experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It helped you to deal. It helps get things that are in the subconscious that you're not going to consciously express. It helps get them out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's to me.
That's what makes them so important. That's what their job in society is.
Yeah.
The not The Walking Dead, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
It expressed some very important things about society in 1968.
Yes, it did.
And
yeah.
It did it in a truly novel way.
Yes, it did.
And that's why it is such a great film and so well known, is because you watch that and you get it.
Yes. I mean, and you can use that as a teacher. You can use that film, you can watch
yeah.
that film and have a discussion racism if you want to do that.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
You can watch that film and have a discussion on topics of family, how do families get along
yeah.
in a temporary crisis because of that film. That film and other films like
yeah.
that can be used for those situations,
right.
which I think they're invaluable to have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was trying to think of another one that's really, really good at expressing something. I think The Black Cat with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff kind of expresses the horror of World War One in a way that most Americans, you know, we lost a lot of people in World War One, but we were only in that war for about a year, and so. To Americans, World War One is not stuck in the American psyche like World War Two is. In Europe, World War One is the big thing. And I think Black Cat expresses some of the horror that Europeans felt about World War One.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think
yeah,
that's one of the important things about it, yeah.
I agree. I mean, I think that movie, whatever the genre, can be used to do so much stuff with. What I really like about horror, I can make a movie, a horror film about a giant conspiracy, giant insects trying to take over the world, right? I can do that. And
yeah.
if you help someone go to a library and read a book about insects, I've done my job. I've done more than my job. If you help someone to understand
yes.
it, to use that film about why we don't use, you want to go willy-nilly with insecticide, I've done my job, right? And then
yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, the yeah. idea with horror films yeah. could be used for so much. And to me, next time I get victimized by film, by a horror film that's nothing more than found film with the same ideas yeah. I've been used 15,000 times before, I'm going to go on a killing rampage.
Yeah. 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 You know, something that I need to talk about that don't get, you know, Ed Wood, Plan 9 from
yeah.
Outer Space.
Right. Plan 9.
That's a film that everybody wants to hate. But, you know, I have watched that film several times. We've hosted it on Tennessee Macaw. And one of the things, you know, made in the 50s that's coming out of Hollywood is talking about how great the United States government is. The government is the savior. Government scientists and the military are going to save everybody from the giant insects.
Yep.
Or the aliens or the mutants or whatever. Ed Wood doesn't do that. When you watch that movie, you realize that Ed Wood is talking about conspiracy theory in 1958, which was kind of unheard of. But it's the first time that I can think of in cinema where you have somebody saying, hey, this is a conspiracy by the United States government. And,
stuff.
You know, the conversation we were having earlier just made that jog in my mind. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's fascinating how this stuff, a lot of stuff isn't new. A lot of the stuff, you know, have you ever heard of the Three Penny Opera?
Of the what?
Three Penny Opera.
Yes, I've heard that name. I'm not sure what it is,
though.
It's an opera
by Bertolt Brecht, who was a German playwright who fled Germany in front of the Nazis, right? He was socialist, anarchist socialist.
Okay.
He fled the United States after the Nazis took power because they knew they were coming to him, right? That's a conspiracy play.
Right.
You know,
right. Oh,
okay. The evil guy, Mac the Knife, right, gets by with murder because he knows the right people.
Right. Okay.
You know, they know he's done. They don't care. I should say nothing's new under the sun because there's not much new under the sun.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
But this makes it all.
Yeah.
It makes horror films more interesting to me because the same ideas in horror films today were the same ideas that people didn't have movies to make of, but they might have wrote in a book, did a play, did a song back in the 1500s.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's actually, you know, some Roman writings about vampires from the first century.
I didn't know that.
You know, yeah. There was actually a fairly serious fear of vampirism in Roman Empire. And I read something from an archaeological dig a few years ago where they found, this is late Roman Empire, they had actually driven stakes into the bodies when they buried them.
Yeah.
And the thought is to keep them from rising.
Yeah, well, let's keep, you know, keep the wife. You know, you kill the wife, you put her on the ground, you don't want to break and come up at night.
That's right.
It's interesting stuff. I mean, it goes back to what would make pork horror, right? I mean, the old woman on the hill, you know, the old guy, you know, whatever else, you know, what else evil things that they know. I mean, guy growing up, my aunt was gone. I can't even remember her name. It's too bad because she was a good kid, good older adult. Yeah. But she taught me what leaves to use to different things, right? Not herbalism per se, but the lucky leaf to wear in a shoe when you want to go to a job interview, right? The plant you want to carry with you if some asshole was giving you a hard time, that would help you protect you, right?
Yeah.
How do you use dowsy rods, right? I mean, Christ, my father knew how to use dowsy rods. I mean, he used to dig wells as a part-time job. He would find the location to dig the well using dowsing rods.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's not horror, but it goes to speak of the culture that we have, the knowledge that we have as people that transcends time.
Yeah, Yeah. I remember I also have a degree in geology.
Oh, wow.
And I would hear I would have these professors and these geology professors, and they would talk about dowsing rods, and they'd laugh, and, oh, man, that doesn't work. It doesn't work, you know. But none of these guys worked in the field. The first time I went out on a drill rig with – I worked with this old geologist, or I thought he was old at the time. I was in my 20s. His name was Don Connell, and he had been drilling wells since the 50s. And these guys wanted to douse. And I said, well, I mean, it's on your own time, whatever. He grabbed me by the shoulder, and he looked at me and said, son, I've been drilling wells for 50 years, and I know what they tell you in those classrooms. But let me tell you, you want these guys to douse and make sure there aren't any utilities there.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they would, as often as not, they'd find that the utilities had been marked improperly. And if they drilled where they were, where we started to put them, they'd hit a water line or a gas line. So I'm a firm believer in dowsing rods.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the things that we don't, which might also make for interesting ideas, because the knowledge that we have, I'm sorry,
yeah,
we're losing more knowledge each and every day that we probably need to keep as a society.
Right, right.
You know, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I just find the whole thing very, very fast. The whole subject is very fascinating because when you talk horror films, yeah, you can take it, in my opinion, you can keep it superficial, but I like deep dives myself.
Yeah.
I really enjoy this conversation because we're having a deep dive.
I'm enjoying it myself. And you were talking about your aunt. I had a great aunt, and she was second-generation Irish.
Okay.
And she grew up in one of the poorest parts of the county I live in, and had like a fourth grade education, which at that time was pretty good education where she was from. So she didn't know a lot about the world or anything, but she could take a grocery bag and walk to the top of this mountain behind me in the springtime and come back with enough food to last her for a week.
She grew
everything that grew, everything that you could eat, everything you could use as medicine.
And
I grew up with stories about banshees and washerwomen and fairies,
and
it was just part of her life.
To me, I feel bad because I didn't pay more attention to my elders when I was younger. And it's kind of a sad thing because I listen. My mother, that side of the family, my mother wanted little to do with that aspect of them, right, for whatever reason. It's too bad because I think there's a lot of knowledge there that I've lost that I'd like to regain, but at my age, it ain't going to happen. But it is what it is, right?
And again,
it makes for good things in a horror film because you kind of get the vampire is killing people like there's no tomorrow, or whatever is killing people like there's no tomorrow. So maybe your hero isn't Mr. Ranger Dick, right, with an AK-47 in one hand and a bazooka in the other and calling down artillery. Maybe the hero in your film is the old woman that knows the plans to use to put the master down.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You know. Or maybe they know why these people are dying. It's because, well, when they dug up this place, they built this building here, they disturbed the graveyard, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Or
yeah,
they disturbed the spirits of the trees or, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, then you got movies like, have you seen the movie Field in England?
The what?
Field in England.
I have not.
Okay, it's an English film, obviously. Takes place around the time of the English Civil War. It's about what happens to a group of people who find themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know. It's interesting about what goes on within these films. I mean, what we see, and start speaking of spirituality, what we see in one level, I'm in my basement, so my wife can watch her TV. I'm in throughout my basement by my four dogs who are trying to sleep and say, what the fuck are you talking about? Shit, Lord, let's sleep, right? But give us a treat to go up before you go back upstairs. Right. But yep. Who knows? I mean, we've also have Furry Door. We've also seen, my wife and I have also seen fairies, let's say, come in and go. Walk out of one wall and walk into another wall. My daughter, when she was yep. much younger, and her friends claimed to see a little guy that was right, she had a little mobile above her bed, would claim that she yep. saw a little guy and that, right in that mobile at night, right? Did she? Did
yep.
we? I don't know. But it could
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
We don't know. We
yeah.
don't know the levels of existence. Is that the right word I'm looking at?
Yeah.
That's the right word you're looking at. We don't know. We have no idea. And I think that, like, you know, like about Lovecraft and those uh-huh. type of writers, the writers of the weird, is they talk about these things. And we don't, and I like that
yeah.
because I like to think there's more in this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things that I enjoy about Lovecraft is Lovecraft deals a lot with passages and portals between worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's dealing, you know, he's talking about the elder gods, and the elder gods are gods that, for folks that are listening that may not have read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft, that existed long before humans and were worshipped and have been forgotten about and that are coming back. It's a very nihilistic approach. But I do like the fact that he talks about portals and multidimensional beings, because I do believe that that there are the Fae are out there. You can call them Fae, you can call them Greys, you can call them whatever you want to, but that there are passages and portals between dimensions that they use.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I mean,
not to get religious, but I'll take the step, is I'm a Roman Catholic,
yeah.
a hardcore Catholic, right?
Right.
I believe in God. I do, but it doesn't mean there can't be other things running around, right?
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's
the Bible
isn't
fair to other things.
Yeah. I mean, and there's no harm in that. I mean, the thing, going back to the idea of horror films, a horror film or the horror book, the horror novel, the whatever, allows us to talk about them in a non-threatening way.
Yes.
Because
yes.
If I showed up at my city meeting as they discussed
uh-huh.
ripping up my tree line to put in a water pipe, and I say you have to be fucking careful because
yeah.
the tree spirits won't be happy with you, they'll think I'm a lunatic, right? But I certainly,
yeah.
I can certainly give them a copy of a book. You know, I can certainly say,
yeah.
you know, be careful. You know, will it do any good? I don't know, but I've done my job, I think. I mean, we don't,
yeah.
and we don't know. I mean, we don't know. And I think there'll come a time that we'll find out for sure. There's more than one universe that we're layered on.
Yes, I agree. I do agree.
Yeah.
I definitely believe that there's a multiverse out there.
Yeah. What it looks like and what's involved, who knows? And that can be scary as
yeah.
all get out, because it may not be...
Yeah.
Some people believe that the Greys, whatever UFOs are, let's say we call it Greys for lack of a better word, you know, are here to protect us, right? What happened to that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's the Twilight Zone, right? To serve mankind, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
When they find out that the book that's everybody thought was a guidebook to how they can help all people is no more than a cookbook, How to Eat Us.
Yeah, that's a freaky episode. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, exactly, and we don't know. I mean, the thing is,
we don't know.
I'm not saying we don't know. It's the thing is, we don't necessarily have to be scared of everything that exists, because that's kind of silly. But at the same time,
yeah.
maybe we want to think twice about some stuff.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with you. Probably you know, my biggest fear with the attempts that NASA's made at extrastellar communication is that something will answer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've been broadcasting millions of watts of energy, radio energy, since, what, 1920, if not earlier?
Yeah, since the 20s,
you know, yeah. I mean, that's still going. I mean, if we can detect, interpret, understand, and communicate with the Voyagers, which are billions of miles away, and I think the energy that comes to the Earth is God, is infinitential, right? Let's think what might be left with something that's going out with a billion, say, a million watts from 1920, what something runs across.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, again, this is going to be a leap, but there's a podcast that I want you to hear. I'll try to find the link and send you the episode. It's called The Black Mesa.
Yeah.
It's called The Hidden Truth. And the guy interviews a scientist out of California. He talks about gravity and how gravity can be manipulated to go faster than the speed of light. And he talks way over my head, right? But the thing that's interesting is he might be wrong, but he might be right. Right?
Yeah.
And if he's right, what does that mean? And then they talk about those tic-tacs and people saying, well, there's a future. Okay, hopefully there are a future. That means there's a future that we'll have, right?
Yeah, right.
But it's crazy stuff. But going back to one of your topics that you brought back up is the idea of playing God is indeed a scary, scary, scary horror subject.
Yes. It is a very scary horror subject. And it is at the root of a lot of science fiction horror.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the classic thing. Man plays God. It goes wrong. And whatever man created eats man.
Yeah.
Of course, another take on that is kind of the creature feature, you know, where man has tampered with nature in some shape, form, or fashion and has created us killer bees.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden we're swarmed by killer bees, you know.
Right. Killer Bees. Oh, I remember, it's kind of a funny movie. I've seen it the day before rabbit season opened back in the day, called Night of the Leapers.
Night of the Leaper. Yeah, I love that movie. It's
okay.
A killer movie.
I mean, it's a movie that's the day before rabbit season.
Yeah, of course.
It was a funny, campy movie. It was enjoyable, right? It was a horror film, but it was more of a campy horror film than a true horror film, right? But they're fun, too.
Those are fun. We hosted one a few weeks ago called Snow Beast, and it stars Bo Svenson and Yvette Mimo, and it's about a ski resort, and they've got a Sasquatch who's gone rampage and killing the skiers, and it is a very campy 70s made for TV horror movie, but it's fun,
Can't be fun. I mean, I had the honor of interviewing back in the day when I did a podcast called In Eastern Wisconsin, a guy that did X-rated werewolf movies. Movies, right? And the one that he talked about that I had imagined before, that was a lot, I never got to see it, was fun talking about it, was the fact that there was a beast. Okay, where do we can find you? Where can we find your webpage again? Because this got the sound that we got to go.
Oh, okay. You can find us on TennesseeMacabre.com, Tennessee Macabre on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And, of course, you go to our Vimeo channel on Tennessee Vimeo / Tennessee Macabre, and you can watch all of our shows.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. When she gives her 90-second countdown, she's not playing. So you can find my books. You can find my books on my webpage, which is www.themilwaukeemob.com, or you can find me under Wayne Klingman with a C on Amazon. And so all my books are there. I would appreciate my guests a great deal from Tennessee Macabre for coming on. You rock out, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And you do too.
Yes, sir. Well, we have to do this again.
Anytime. I'm glad to come on anytime you want to talk about horror.
All right, sir. Thanks again. I appreciate it. You were great dealing with that. You have a great night. And say hello to Bigfoot for me.
I will do it. Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.